Welcome to Straight Talk on Health. I'm your host, Dr. Chet Salasco. Straight Talk on Health is a joint production with WGVU in Grand Rapids, Michigan. I examine the practical application of health information, nutrition, exercise, diet, supplements. I look at the science behind them and let you know whether it's something to consider or not. You can check out other things that I do on my website, drchet.com, and please sign up for my free emails. We know that microbes like probiotics are supposed to be in the large intestine. That's where they do their job, so to speak. We also know that there's a microbiome for just about every location in the body. In other words, each has its own microbiome. The skin has its own microbiome, and it can change depending on the location on your body. We know that the ear canal, the nasal cavity, the upper lungs, the lower lungs, all have their own microbiome. It doesn't mean that they have the same variety or type of microbes as does the large intestine, but each has its own friendly microbes that remain in balance to one another. But what if there's a shift in the microbiome within a specific location? I'm talking about the small intestine. While it does have its own microbiome as well, what if things begin to grow uncontrollably? The result could be a problem for the person whose microbiome in the small intestine is out of whack. I'm going to talk about small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, or SIBO for short, on this podcast. In the small intestine, there are rarely more than 1,000 different organisms. Now contrast that with a large intestine, which at last count has at least 6,500 different microbes, and some of the bacteria have numerous species. So leaving it at 1,000 seems unreasonably low, at least it appears that way. What limits the amount of microbes in the small intestine? Well, it appears there are two things. First, the acidity of the stomach. It's a very hostile atmosphere, and it extends slightly beyond the stomach into the upper realm of the small intestine. We know well that if there is an overproduction of stomach acid, it can result in ulcers, either of the stomach or of the first part of the small intestine. But what if the acidity of the stomach is too low? A little more on the stomach first. There are other natural safeguards in place that limit bacterial growth in the small intestine. Bile acids used in the digestion of fats also limit the growth of bacteria. And then finally, digestive enzymes also have a role to play. They are naturally released by the pancreas to digest protein, carbohydrates, and fats. If a person doesn't naturally produce enough digestive enzymes, it can contribute to an overgrowth of undesirable bacteria in the small intestine. The second factor that limits the growth of bacteria in the small intestine is what's called antigrade motility. In other words, because of the peristaltic movement of the digestive system, food only moves in one direction, and that's away from the stomach, through the small intestine, on towards the large intestine. So what's the result of SIBO? Generally, the simple types of symptoms are going to be bloating, especially in the upper abdominal area, closest to the stomach. But it doesn't stop there. It can also cause severe pain and discomfort, contribute to constipation or diarrhea, depending on the types of bacteria that take hold. In effect, it can leave people feeling miserable. SIBO is now one of the most common diagnostic considerations when people experience these types of symptoms. So back to the stomach. What causes the lack of acidity in the stomach? It could be the use of proton pump inhibitors that people take because they overproduced acid in the past. I use them occasionally if I manage to eat too late. My solution was to really limit how often I do that, and I try to keep that number to zero. Those types of medications are really designed for use for only 14 days. That's why they're often sold in 14-day packs. Yet some people need them on a regular basis. My wife Paula does, and her dad did as well. Genetically, they just seem to overproduce stomach acid. So that's one contributing factor. Another contributing factor could also be the lack of production of digestive enzymes by the pancreas. If food doesn't get broken down in the small intestine, it leaves more for bacteria to ferment. Fermentation equals the production of gas, and that definitely can cause bloating. How it progresses to become more serious with more significant symptoms has to do with diet and the type of bacteria that may be present. And when it comes to the type of bacteria, research has identified multiple species that are involved in SIBO. The most common species include Streptococcus, Escherichia coli, also known as E. coli, Lactobacillus, and Bacteroides. The fact that the bacteria are present doesn't always equal out-of-control growth. Having occasional bloating when certain foods are eaten doesn't seem to be all that serious, nor enough to warrant a visit to a specialist. But that doesn't mean that if a poor diet continues, together with the lack of production of stomach acid and digestive enzymes continues unchecked, that things couldn't get serious. You probably noticed that I said that a strain of E. coli is one of the bacteria that has been associated with SIBO. You see, under normal conditions, the rest of the microbes keep it in check. It's only when the negative bacteria can grow uncontrolled that the more severe symptoms can occur. I've spent a lot of time explaining what SIBO is. Well, what can you do about it? First step, get a diagnosis from a physician. That can be tricky because there's no single test available at the present time. The most common test is a breath test to check the amount of hydrogen or methane you're producing. But the breath test is not always accurate, so it's probably going to be symptom-driven by the degree of discomfort and bloating, as well as the more serious symptoms that are going to be considered in the diagnosis. Think of it as a process of elimination. You eliminate the most serious digestive issues like irritable bowel syndrome or Crohn's disease, and then you're left with a possible. No, it seems like a backward way to diagnose something that could end up being serious, but that seems to be the state of the art at the present time. How do they typically help people with SIBO? Well, typically, they may use a course of very specific antibiotics to knock out the overgrowth. For some people, a physician may recommend the use of digestive enzymes if there is pancreatic insufficiency. Then, the attempt to control it may utilize what's called the FODMAP diet. And for those of you who've had digestive issues, I'll bet you were just waiting for me to say FODMAP diet. Seems like everybody has had to be on that diet at one point or another. And yes, that includes my wife Paula as well. So exactly what is the FODMAP diet? Well, it stands for fermentable oligosaccharides, disaccharides, monosaccharides, and polyols. Those are all forms of sugars. I think the operative word is fermentable. That's typically the way that the bacteria, the microbiome, function in the large intestine. But that wasn't the design of the small intestine. So when the microbes that don't belong there are stimulated to grow by the lack of stomach acid, as well as possibly the lack of digestive enzymes, the fermentation process causes the overgrowth and the subsequent symptoms. And when you consider that list, it's many types of carbohydrates that you might want to eat, which are short-chain carbohydrates and sugar alcohols. FODMAPs occur in some foods naturally or as additives. The list of foods in that plan far exceed what I can tell you in this podcast. Simply search FODMAP in a search engine and you'll find it easily. But the other thing is that you should not follow it unless your doctor tells you to. It's not that it's dangerous in any way. It's just that there are some things that you have to do along the way that require significant explanation if you're going to do it properly. And the goal is for you to feel better. Well, that's SIBO. It can be simple discomfort, or it could be significantly impacting your life. As I said earlier, don't play games. If you feel it's an issue, get a diagnosis so that you know what you're dealing with. Then you'll be able to do the things from a dietary perspective that may help restore the balance in the microbiome within the small intestine. After all, it's all about balance on the road to better health. And that's it for this episode. Till next time, this is Dr. Chet Solasko saying, health is a choice. Choose wisely today and every day.